The harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. I see the theme selected for this Pentecost season is, Beloved, we are fireworks. Oh, yay. And one of the things I've particularly appreciated in the past few months is the wonderful preaching from our joint worship teams. I particularly notice at Pentecost the passion with which Andrew delivered his message. And perhaps it was because with Zoom he was really up close and personal. But I do think that we Anglicans sometimes miss out on the passion of preachers in other traditions. So this is all to warn you that I'm going to be speaking today about something I'm very passionate about, the subject of racism. And experience has shown that when I get passionate about something, some people's feathers are going to get ruffled. So be ready to be ruffled. Growing up in the Garden of England, I was a teenager before I actually saw a person of colour in the flesh. Of course, I'd seen black people on the television, the Harlem Globetrotters who were goofy, the West Indies cricket team who were fearsome, and of course, there were the travelogues that showed African tribes doing exotic dances. And these were really fascinating to me because in those days, it was the only place you could see naked ladies on television. And that was very exciting for a young boy. And then, of course, there were the Westerns, in which Native Americans were always the bad guys who did unspeakable things to their captives. I can safely say that at no point in these childhood exposures did it ever occur to me that these were people like me, with families that they loved, with their own dreams and ambitions. Without exception, they were objects for my entertainment. In other words, I was brought up to be a racist. So I'm here to confess to you that I am racist. How could I not be, when all my upbringing, the cultural influences, and yes, the privileges I enjoy in society, speak of the superiority of white, English-speaking males? But I've come to realize that part of the reason I was led here to Canada was to question that ingrained racism. And of course, part of being Canadian is that we can always point our fingers at our neighbors in the United States. We react with horror at the way black Americans are treated, not least by the police forces we assume are there to serve and protect. But honestly, it's unfair to blame police forces, because police forces are simply a reflection of the values of the society that hires them. In our case, a predominantly white society that is more concerned sometimes about protecting property, because let's face it, very few of us need them to protect our lives. And it is frankly bizarre to tell ourselves that the same kind of thing doesn't go on in Canada. People of colour, especially black and indigenous people, suffer exactly the same kind of indignities every single day. The only difference is that violence is not as much a cornerstone of our society as it seems to be south of the border. Now, one reason why I'm so passionate about this is because it very directly affects people that I love. But I hope that that isn't the only reason. I hope it's because I have the nerve to call myself a Christian and to share God's love for all people. I've been very blessed to have people of colour in my family. Two of Carol's grandchildren have Indo-Caribbean ancestry. And my son's partner for many years was a woman who is black. A woman who is one of the kindest people you could ever meet and whom I have come to love dearly. And through her, I've met, mainly online, her niece, who is a very impressive young woman, currently training to be a paramedic. So rather than being a white guy talking about people of colour's lived experience, I asked them to share with us what it was like for them growing up in Canada, which very courageously they did. First, the aunt, who wrote, "To me, racism in Canada is the devastation I felt in grade 3, when I wasn't allowed to play with my best friend outside of school because her parents told her to stay away from coloured kids. Racism in Canada is the humiliation I felt at 10 years old while crossing the street after two men shouted at me using the N-word before hurling an unfinished McDonald's drink in my face because they decided I was taking too long to cross. Racism in Canada is the desperation I felt at 12 as I begged and pleaded with my mother to homeschool me because I was being crucified by a group of kids at recess who would taunt and throw mud at me because my skin colour made me look like a mud flap. Growing up as a visible minority in a predominantly Caucasian population, I learned very quickly to assimilate to protect myself. That acceptance came at a cost. I learned to ignore being followed in the stores. I learned not to flinch when people forgot that I was in the room and used racial slurs, only to excuse their ugliness with, 'Oh, no, 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 I don't mean you. I just meant the bad ones.' I learned that my full lips, the texture of my hair, and the hue of my skin was just different from the people around me. And by the time I was 13, I had learned that as a result, I could never be something beautiful. This from a woman who is truly beautiful. And then a generation later from the niece. Racism in Canada is real, and yes, I have experienced it firsthand. The first time I was called a racial slur was when I was 11 or 12. A Caucasian boy, the same age as me, called me nothing but a dirty nigger while I was walking around the playground. This was at a Catholic school. Another memory, at the same school I would always get into small fights at school and the kids would surround me and just call me all types of swears. That would bother me too, but then they would drop discriminatory comments and end it with the N-word. That was the worst. And because I would stand up for myself and not fit in with them, I was shunned. And so as I grew older, I would learn to be quiet when a racial remark was made. I didn't even tell my family what was going on, because I remember first telling a teacher, quite a few teachers to be honest, about being called the N-word. And their replies were like, "Well, we didn't hear nor see it. So how do we know you aren't lying? It probably didn't happen." I don't know about you, but what horrifies me is not so much the behavior of the children who seem always to find ways of zeroing in on points of difference when choosing who to bully. It is the reaction of the adults, the teachers, who automatically assumed the child of color was making it up. Isn't that there in that one story, the definition of institutional racism? People in authority remaining silent. And we haven't even started to talk about racism directed at Canada's Indigenous peoples. That's, frankly, a whole other sermon. But what I am trying to say is that this is not someone else's problem. It's our problem. As people of power and relative privilege, people who try to be followers of Christ. The harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. A few days ago, Carol and I went with her granddaughter to the Chilliwack Black Lives Matter march. The march was organized by high school students, and I couldn't help noticing how few gray hairs there were in the crowd, because, yes, virtually everyone was wearing a mask and people were generally respecting physical distance. And somebody said to me, "Well, it's probably appropriate that the young people lead the way on this." I don't agree. After all, many of us who are baby boomers were just as passionate about racial injustice back in the 1960s. And then somehow we dropped the ball. It was Martin Luther King who said, "It may well be that we will have to repent in this generation, not merely for the vitriolic words and the violent actions of the bad people, but for the appalling silence and indifference of the good people." The appalling silence and indifference of the good people. Now is the time for us to speak up. And the good news is that even as elders, new technology allows us to speak up again. Just as we found a safe way to worship together, we don't need to indulge in potentially risky behaviors like marching in large crowds, because while this struggle is taking place in the streets, it is also taking place amongst our families and our friends. It's also taking place online through social media, where the voices of the bad people are very loud indeed. So this is the time for us to share Christ's words of love for all God's people, not to stay silent when our friends and families say things that feed into the racist narrative. And even if you don't use social media, now is the time to get on board, because we need to make sure the voices of the good Christian people drown out the voices of racism and privilege. And I know it's been said there's no point because we'll never change anyone's mind. But Jesus thought of that when he said, "If anyone will not welcome you or listen to your words, shake off the dust from your feet as you leave that house or town. Truly I tell you, it will be more tolerable for the land of Sodom and Gomorrah on the day of judgment than for that town, than for those people." So just move on. But if we change one person's mind, one person's heart, we will have done God's work. The harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. And we, my friends, we are those laborers.